to reconvene the Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs. It's now in the afternoon, May 26th, and I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3418.
Over the Senate the way it is?
Yeah.
I'm trying to move House Bill 3418 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator,
not really much more enthusiastically than I did this morning.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3418 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Excused.
Senator Marquette?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Montana?
Aye.
Motion carries. And I'll carry the bill. Motion passes. I'll carry it. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3418. And I will, we're going to carry over House Bill 2589. We still do not have the amendments. Okay, I will open a work session on House Bill 2059. And colleagues, the only amendments that I want to consider at this point in time are the 8, which bring the Veterinary Commission and the Veterinary Board and the Mortuary Board into the bill. They were inadvertently left out. So those are the dash 8. The dash 9 is just a technical fix, just a couple of sentences on the dash 9s, and the dash 11s is just conflict amendments that take care of whatever else he said there was a lot of conflicts.
So we need the.
So we'll open, I think I did a work session on 2059.
Okay, so we want the 8s, 9s, and 11s,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's all.
Okay, ma'am, try to move the A8 amendment to House Bill 2059.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 8 A8 to House Bill 2059. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Please note Senator Bates is excused. Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the A9 amendment to House Bill 2059.
Senator Cruz moves the A9 amendments to House Bill 2059. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. Motion adopted. Please note Senator Bates is excused.
Madam Chair, I move the A11 amendment to House Bill 2059.
Senator Cruz moves the A11 amendments to House Bill 2059. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Motion adopted. Please note Senator Bates is excused.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2059 as amended to the floor to due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2059 as adopted or as amended with to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Motion passes. And I need to look to see. Please note Senator Bates is excused. And I can't remember who's on this bill. Does someone have that handy? Or maybe it's a government bill. I need to know who would like to carry this bill. I guess I'll carry it. Well, no. I want someone else to carry it.
It's an interim committee bill.
Oh, is it? No, it's the interim committee bill. Okay.
I think Senator Morissette would like to carry it.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Senator Morissette. Okay, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2059, and I will open a work session on House Bill. Oh, just to let everyone know, House Bill 2056 is dead because we're taking the guts of that and putting it in 2058. So, and we've already done 2194, so I'll open work session on House Bill 2058.
And you want the 12s.
And we only want the 12s, because that takes elements from House Bill 3232 and 2056 and the other changes that we made regarding the number of years that you serve on the board.
Madam Chair, I move the -812 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Okay, Senator Cruz
moves the -12s to House Bill 2058. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. And please note Senator Bates is excused and motion carries. And I will carry this bill.
Well, all we've done is adopt the amendment.
Oh, we only adopted the amendment.
Yes. So we probably need another motion.
I think we need another
motion. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2058 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2058A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Yeah.
Yes.
We have, obviously, a lot of time has been spent on these, on all these boards, and I'm really still, nobody's ever explained to me what problem they're trying to solve here. I think we should have left well enough alone.
You have four bills.
Any other discussion? Okay, clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates.
Abstain.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
The consolidated.
Senator Morris.
Okay, motion carries. I'll carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2058. And we'll close the work session on 2058, and we're going to open I think we covered them all, right? We're now
yes.
down to okay. I cannot open 2702 until for three more minutes because we didn't post it.
How many minutes?
4 minutes.
Officially, I posted the agenda at 3:43.
Hey, we're going
so we
now.
Are we able now? Yes.
I'll open a public hearing.
Good time.
2702. And colleagues, this is the psychologist scope bill, and all I want to do today, I don't plan to move it, is I want to have people go through the bill on what it actually does, and then we're going to go through, I think there's two sets of amendments, go through that and tell us what that will do, and then we will plan to move the bill on Thursday, but we just want to discuss the guts of the amendments and the bill. That we really need to know what's in it. So with that, did I open a public hearing on 2702? Well, if not, I just did. So Laura and Robin, do you want to start us out going through bill?
This would be the -9 amendment.
Well, we're just going to do the bill first.
Oh.
We really got to understand what's in the bill first. Before we just had public testimony, but we really need to go line by line on what is in the A engrossed House Bill 2702.
Senator Monis Anderson, members of the committee, right now you're getting passed out to you a document called the Overview of House Bill 2702. And so I can walk section by section with you through this bill.
Identify or something.
My apologies. I'm Dr. Robin Henderson. I'm a psychologist from Bend, Oregon. So I'll wait till you have that in your hands. I also would reference you also to the Department of Defense chart. I know that's been a question, too, and I'm prepared to answer any questions you may have about the Department of Defense training that you might have today as well. When we look at the overview of the bill, Section 1 is just basically the definitions. Section 2, okay. And I'll do the A and gross version first, and then Laura and I together will cover the amendment.
Is there any discussion on prescribing psychologist formulary definitions?
Okay. Section 2 just makes it part of the statute.
Okay.
Section 3, in this section, Section 3, this is part of what will change in the amendment, but in the A and gross version, Section 3 gives the Board of Psychologist Examiners the power to issue a certificate of prescriptive authority, and then it defines the conditions with which that certificate can be issued. And the conditions are 2 years of post-licensure experience in an inpatient or outpatient setting.
Just a minute.
Oh, sorry.
So, again, I'm going to go very slowly on this. So, right now, it states on line 19 that a psychologist may prescribe drugs listed on the prescribing psychologist formulary. Is that changing in the amendment?
My apologies. I don't have the actual bill right in front of me. I just have the engrossed amendment. I mean, the dash 9 amendment. What's changing is who has the power to issue the certificate.
Okay. So keep... All right. Yeah. All right.
Chair Montes Anderson... For the record, my name is Laura Smith. Right now, the committee, under the bill, the committee has the ability to make recommendations on that formulary, and they will retain that ability to make all recommendations on the formulary, the education, the continuing education credits. Those pieces are all written in the bill that they have that advisory authority.
They have the advisory authority.
Mm-hmm.
Recommending authority for the formulary, the continuing education, the curriculum, and the bulk of the rules.
And that's the board.
That's the committee.
Okay. So we haven't gotten to the explanation of the committee yet.
Correct.
Right? So, yeah. Go ahead.
In Section 3, the dash 10 amendments will give the committee the ability to give the certificate. So the committee will now have certificate authority as opposed to the Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Since we're on that topic, do you mind if we just tease that out on the committee? So maybe we should get the dash 12s, because otherwise I think I'm going to get confused on, you said the dash...
Madam Chair, right now they're represented in the dash 9 amendments
dash
before
nine.
You.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you have a dash 9?
There's going to be a dash 10?
There will be a dash 10 amendment, and that amendment just addresses one small word change. They inadvertently put the Department of Education rather than the Department of Defense in one of the sections of the bill, so they'll just be changing that over to clarify that it's actually the Department of Defense. Other than that, all the changes will be are there represented in dash 9.
Okay, so do you mind if we just go over the dash 9s so
sure.
that we understand what the Committee on Prescribing Psychologists is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we're happy to do that. Talk a little bit about how we got to the dash 9s. Senator Bates made it clear that there was some concern about physician oversight of this program. I explained to him that there was a committee that was set up under the Board of Psychological Examiners that did include physicians. It had two psychologists, three physicians, and a pharmacist, and then also a liaison to the Board of Psychological Examiners. He said that he would feel much more comfortable if we added an additional psychiatrist to that board, so they would have the majority plus one. We agreed that that made some sense. So not only did we ask for an additional psychiatrist to be on the board, but we also agreed to have both of the psychologists have that postdoctoral master's degree in psychopharmacology or have the training from the Department of Defense. In addition, we gave that committee the ability to certify and decertify any prescribing psychologist. So if there are any problems, that committee has the authority to immediately yank or revoke that person's certification. In addition, there was some language in the 2702-A that allowed for that committee to sunset eventually. We have removed that language, and so therefore that committee will be there for perpetuity.
So this committee is one person who is an MD?
The committee?
Two people who are psychiatrists? As it's listed?
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it will be two psychologists who have the postmaster doctor's degree, one primary care physician, two psychiatrists, one of them being a professor at OHSU, and one person who specializes in child psychiatry. It'll more than likely be a child psychiatrist, in addition to a pharmacist. All of those members, the physicians will be appointed by their board. So the medical board will be appointing their members with concurrence from the Board of Psychological Examiners, and the pharmacy board will be appointing the pharmacist.
We have one person who's a physician experienced in treating children who have mental. So there's actually four physicians.
Four physicians.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was our belief that this addressed the concern that was raised on the House hearings and also the concerns raised by Senator Bates that would provide true physician oversight for the program.
Thank you. And let's keep going through the dash nines then.
Okay.
On what the committee does, the advisory committee does.
The advisory committee will have the authority to certify and decertify, as Laura had spoken about. The committee will also have the authority to make recommendations in the areas of curriculum, continuing education requirements, the formulary itself, and the making of the rules. The committee will be responsible in Section 10 of the Dash 9s. The committee will be responsible for establishing the rules that allow folks who have been trained prior to the commencement of this bill to be considered for certification. So there may be additional qualifications or rules those folks may have to go through, and this committee will be responsible for adopting those rules.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd also like to point out that what we have in the bill right now is a floor. This advisory committee can review the education that's required in the bill and has the ability to recommend that there be additional education and training.
Are there any other further questions about the committee itself or the committee structure?
Go ahead and explain then. A licensed psychologist may apply for a certificate. Please go through then the qualifications that they need.
A licensed psychologist has to have 2 years of post-licensure experience in an inpatient or outpatient setting that provides any level of physical health care.
And do they have to be supervised in that 2 years? This is just
no,
their own.
This is post-licensure experience.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Can we ask a question?
Yes, please.
Could you define what you mean by any level of physical health care services? I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about accredited hospitals? Are we talking about outpatient clinics?
It could be an inpatient psychiatric unit. It could be somebody who's serving in capacity with a hospital or a healthcare setting. It could be somebody who's working as a psychologist in a primary care clinic. But we left the latitude to the committee to determine what a level of healthcare setting would be. So, for instance, I would be making my application to do this, and I would say that I've had 2 years' experience as a psychologist working in a primary health care setting. The committee could say, yes, that qualifies as a primary health care clinic, or the committee could say, really, no, it may not because of these reasons. But we want the person to have exposure in a primary health care setting before they start their training.
Madam Chair, I'm really concerned. It's pretty loose language, and you know, most times you have to be in residency programs or training programs have been accredited in some way, but I appreciate you trying to give some room to the committee to make that decision. I'm not sure I agree with the language, though, but I understand your intent. That's fine.
Thank you. And that is different than what will happen after licensure. This is the pre before you can go in for your certificate, your 2-year degree. Does that make sense?
Yes, Senator.
I want to go back to page 2, line 9. One person who is a physician experienced in treating children. What certification would that physician have?
Generally speaking, Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Morissette, that would generally be a psychiatrist. It might, in some circumstances, be a behavioral pediatrician, but most likely would be a psychiatrist. We left the latitude to the Board of Medical Examiners to make the determination of that person.
I guess I was assuming it would be a pediatrician with training in that field, but you're saying it would be a psychiatrist who treats children, but...
Senator Morissette and members of the committee, it could be a pediatrician who's trained in behavioral disorders.
Okay, it could be.
Or it could also be a child psychiatrist.
Okay.
We left that to the discretion of the board.
Okay. But it's pretty vague the way it's worded.
Senator Morissette, members of the committee.
You would have the designations spelled out of who, what their titles would be, what their qualifications were.
I'd just like to clarify that this would be up to the Oregon Medical Board. It wouldn't be the Oregon Psychological Examiners Board who would be making that appointment. So the medical board could go and determine if they want a child psychiatrist there in that position on that committee. They could put that person up for being the member. So
that's where
that language came from. So.
And just one other comment. I know that when the Oregon Medical Board was before us, they said that they really had a very difficult time in getting members to serve on their board. And how often do you envision this advisory committee meeting? I assume it'll have to meet quite often at the beginning to set it up. Have you done any talk with the physicians on... Or probably not, because you don't know if this bill will pass.
No, Madam Chair, members of the committee, you are correct. I understand that problem across all the boards. The executive director, Deborah Orman McHugh, has looked into this, and we sat down many times during this interim, during the summer, talking about how we could set this up so it would be workable. She feels that it will be workable, and I believe that she's had conversations with her colleagues to talk about the process for setting this up. I'm sorry, I can't answer the question as to how many times they'll be meeting at this point. We just haven't gotten to that point with the executive director at this point.
Thank you. Let's go back to then the on page 3 of the amendment. We have 2 years of post-licensure clinical experience. Then let's go to the next paragraph, B.A.
The master's degree in clinical psychopharmacology from an accredited school with training in physical assessment, pathophysiology, psychopharmacology, and clinical management, differential diagnosis, and applied pharmacological management, or completion of Department of Defense psychopharmacology training.
And I'd heard that there are really only a couple of places that they can do this, and a lot of them do it online with a school that's in California. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are actually 6 institutions across the country that offer a clinical postdoctoral master's degree. There's one at Argosy University at Tripler Air Force Base in Hawaii. There's one at Fairleigh Dickinson, which I believe is in Florida, if I remember correctly. There's one in New Mexico, affiliated with New Mexico State University. There's also Alliance Program, affiliated with the California School of Professional Psychology. And many of the folks in Oregon did take the training through Alliance. That's offered in, it's not an online program, it's offered in a clinical didactic, kind of like where you're sitting and you have the ability to interact on a video monitor with your professor and other classmates live while the class is going on. For some of the folks who went through that cohort, and we have somebody here who's completed that training, they would also fly down to the California campus for periodic training as well. But they were live, interactive, in there, in the moment with the professor and could see them on the video monitor.
Senator Monsander Anderson, members of the committee, I would also like to point out that that is now what the Department of Defense is using for their training for their folks. They send their people to one of these 6 programs across the country, and then they come in back to the Department of Defense where they receive their supervised clinical training. But right now, these programs are the same programs that the Department of Defense is using.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd actually spoken with someone this morning who was explaining that 75% of the current prescribers, psychologist prescribers, who are working in military bases across the world came from civilian training programs.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Did they come, may I ask, did they come from these programs, 75% of them?
Yes, 75% of them came from these six programs.
And how long do the programs take?
The programs take approximately 2 years. Some people may take a little longer.
And how many people have gone through that successfully or are now working in the Department of Defense, either Army, Navy, or whatever?
According to our resources, our sources, and mind you, they're not like identified, so there's not a list that the American Psychological Association has, but they know of 12 people who are currently practicing in military bases around the world. There may be more that we are not aware of. There have been over 500 people trained to date in the programs in the six universities across the country. 500 people have taken the postdoctoral master's degree.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Please.
What are those people doing with their degrees? Merely prescribing? Are they in the armed forces? Or where are they?
Senator Bates, members of the committee, we have 13 of those folks here in the state of Oregon right now that really just thought that they needed to go and get that additional training to be licensed psychologists. They just use that as background information in the work that they do today.
And Senator Bates and members of the committee, over 100 of them are prescribing in New Mexico and Louisiana at this time. There are many based in Hawaii who had studied with Argosy in Hawaii, had several attempts at legislation. There are also many in some of the other states that have been looking at this type of legislation as well.
Okay. I'll go to B then, line 17 on page 3.
Right there, big B. Has successfully completed the U.S. Department of Defense psychopharmacology demonstration project. There were 10 psychologists who completed this project, three of whom are still serving in the active military in some capacity, either as active military or civilian contractors. But we wanted the provision for those 10 people to be able to serve in Oregon as well. The next line says, has completed in no less than 12 months and no more than 24 months an integrated clinical experience of at least 800 hours. This is the clinical supervision residency type experience, I believe you were speaking of, Senator Bates. That is a minimum of a year and can take up to 2 years to complete. When we were in the work group with Representative Kotek, when this was House Bill 2800 last session, one of the recommendations came out to put a minimum amount of clinical supervised hours within that year that provided more definition than just saying a year of clinically supervised experience. So we negotiated the 800 hours. At that time it was 200. In the interim, we raised that to 800 after our discussions with the psychiatrists and made that 800 hours. But it has to take place over a minimum of a year and a maximum of two.
And they have to be under the supervision of a psychiatric nurse practitioner or a licensed physician. Is this doable?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do believe that this is doable. Some of the 13 members of the original cohort who have taken this training have worked out supervision agreements with physicians in Oregon, including psychiatrists, who are willing to supervise them in these clinically supervised experiences if we're able to pass this bill.
And how many psychologists do you think would take advantage of this program?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, right now I'd venture to say in the first year there would probably safely be 7 to 8 of those 13 who would actively go out and pursue that immediately.
Thank you.
And Senator Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. Excuse me.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was just going to put on the record that, you know, we put, in addition to adding the 800 hours, we also talked about requiring them to go and work in a public health setting. So that would be like our state hospital, our VA programs, our community mental health clinics. We're all very familiar with the understaffing going on in these places, especially when it comes to prescribers. So I think it's very realistic to think that these folks can go and find this kind of educational opportunity. In addition, we added in the requirement that they spend 160 hours in the primary care setting in addition to the public health setting. Once again, these came after our conversations with the psychiatrists throughout the interim. So.
Madam Chair?
Yes, please.
Follow-up question. What is your definition or what's your impression of the word supervision when you talk about being under the supervision of a physician or nurse practitioner? What are you thinking there?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, and members of the committee, I'm thinking this is the traditional supervision experience that's required by the Board of Psychologist Examiners, where you document actual clinical hours that you spend discussing cases with your supervisor. Your supervisor reviews and signs off your charts, and in this case would review and sign off your medication decisions as well. So you're actively having conversations about the patients that you are seeing. Additionally, in the supervision contract, there's a requirement in the bill for supervision training that the Board of Psychologist Examiners will set up a supervision training where they will train the people who are interested in being supervisors. And then they're required to report their competence in a variety of different areas, and that's described a little later in the bill, where they're required to report back to the board their competence in everything from history and physicals to medical decision-making and all those other types of things. And if the supervisor does not deem them to be competent, they can't move on to the next step of getting their certificate. It's the same process that I went through to get my license as a psychologist, and I'm sure many others.
Thank you. All right, keep going down. I think B is explanatory on line 27, unless there's questions. Passing a national certification examination. And who designs that examination?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is a national certification examination that is, and my apologies, I'm forgetting what the acronym refers to, but it's called the PEP examination, and that's what the Department of Defense requires. That's what Louisiana and New Mexico have required, and it's a national certification examination that has tested, you know, around this issue, and that's specifically all it drives to is psychopharmacology and the medical issues surrounding that. Dr. Lindsay has a document that I believe she sent to Senator Bates that outlines some of the questions that are on the PEP exam that were fairly medically based, and I can provide that to the committee if that would be of assistance.
I was just wondering who designed it. I mean, who makes the exam? Are they physicians? Are they psychologists? Okay. That's all right. Just a question. All right.
I can find out the answer to that question for you, Madam Chair, and get back to you with that.
Are physicians required to take a pharmacology exam?
Usually do it our second, third year. Well, I mean, it's 30 years ago. I don't know. I'm a little outdated now. Yes. That time they were.
Just wondering how the comparability between the compatibility, whatever you want to call it, between the two exams.
It was my day to put in a flex exam, which is new, and for me it's new, and I have taken it. It varies from state to state to a certain degree, but in medical school you had to take a pharmacology exams and had to complete that part of your program before you could move on.
This exam is different than the exam that physicians take because they are broader based in this.
Right.
Madam Chair, yes, that is correct. This is one national standardized exam. My hunch is, and my apologies for not being more proficient in that examination itself, but my hunch is it's proctored by the same organization that does the national exam for psychologists in general. So that probably another arm of that same company did that, but there's only one exam.
Then the next section for a minimum of 20% of the clinical experience required must have been accumulated in each of these following areas. So please go through that.
This is where during the interim, Madam Chair and members of the committee, during the interim, when we were working with the psychiatrists, we talked about the desire to have experience proctored in a primary care setting and also in a public health setting. And so we add in a requirement that a portion of the supervised hours, and we set these as minimums, must be in a primary care setting to get exposure to the primary care world, and also in a public health setting to broaden the base and the commitment to the service of the public health sector.
It doesn't say how many hours or what percent. Well, 20% has to be in at least one of them, and then 100%
hours.
The other. Okay, go ahead.
Section 5, the licensed physician or nurse practitioner providing the supervision required shall provide evidence to the committee that the licensed psychologist has completed the integrated clinical experience, demonstrated competency in physical examination, mental status evaluation, medical history interview, documentation, and assessment, and then indications and interpretation, differential diagnosis, integrated treatment planning, consultation, and collaboration, and treatment management. And that's the point where the supervisor provides that report to the committee and says, this is my evaluation of this person ready for certificate.
Any questions on that piece?
Okay.
At this point, the committee shall notify the State Board of Pharmacy of receipt of application for the certificate and the approval of the application for the certificate of prescriptive authority. And then the committee has the authority to issue the certificate of prescriptive authority to the licensed psychologist providing satisfactory evidence of completion.
Okay. Questions? All right. In Section 5?
Section 5 gives the Committee on Prescribing Psychologists the ability to deny, suspend, or revoke a certificate of prescriptive authority upon proof of a prescribing psychologist's inappropriate use of that prescriptive authority. And then it also leaves in there, the second paragraph discusses that the Board of Psychologist Examiners retains authority over the actual license of the psychologist themselves. So while the certificate, the committee has the ability to give and take the certificate, the Board of Psychologist Examiners retains the authority to give and take the license. And those two may blend depending on if there's disciplinary action that bleeds over into something that has to do with a license infraction.
Okay. Go ahead.
Section 6 discusses the rules that the State Board of Psychologist Examiners needs to adopt, and that includes establishing the formula and annual formulary revisions. And again, this is done with recommendation from the committee. Establishing competency standards that a psychologist must meet to maintain their certificate. At this time, they are defined as 50 hours of continuing education requirements every 2 years on top of the first 50 hours every 2 years required to be a licensed psychologist. So someone with a certificate of prescriptive authority is required to attain 100 credit hours of clinical education every 2 years. They also have to set the rules of, that's the continuing education piece. They will also set the rules for maintaining a written consultation agreement with an experienced mental health professional with prescriptive authority for a minimum of 2 years following the integrated clinical experience. This was intended so that once somebody attains their certificate, for the next 2 years, they have to maintain a written consultation agreement with somebody who has the ability to prescribe mental health drugs. That could be a psychiatrist, that could be a nurse practitioner. That is also broad enough to be a psychologist with prescriptive authority. But they have to maintain a written consultation agreement that they set up, and the board maintains that. And the board will set rules and guidelines for reporting on that. The board shall also provide a biennial report by January 31st of each odd-numbered year to the legislature on the number of prescribing psychologists in this state, the number of prescriptions written by prescribing psychologists, and the progress of the board and the committee on the prescribing psychologists in implementing sections 3-7 of this act. The intention in this was for Oregon to be the first state that actually tracks the number of psychologists who are prescribing and the types of prescriptions that we're writing, so that we can work then collaboratively to do some quality assurance analysis to make sure that they're maintaining the standards of appropriate prescribing.
The 50 hours of continuing ed, that's like 6 full days a year. Oh, every 2 years. So that's 3. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
Senator
Morse.
Before we leave Section 6, ask or the Section 1, the State Board of Psychologist Examiners shall adopt rules regarding the annual formulary revisions and competency standards. What qualifications exist within the State Board of Psychologist Examiners with respect to these specific issues?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, members of the committee. The Board of Psychologist Examiners will be responsible for the formulary, but it is our intention that the committee, which is outlined in Section 3 of this bill, will make recommendations regarding that formulary. It is our hope that they will adopt an established formulary either similar to the nurse practitioners or also the U.S. Army has a wonderful psychologist prescribing formulary that's been vetted and that is studied on a routine qualitative basis. And I believe it is their intention to look at established formularies and use the evidence base for that rather than creating it and just picking the medications.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, just one more thing to add to that. If you look at the first section of the bill, which has the definitions, it describes the prescribing psychologist formulary. So it's a list of drugs and the protocols for their use adopted by the state board, but it requires that they be mental health drugs. It's limited to mental health drugs. It's not our full array of
no
pharmacopoeia.
I guess, Madam Chair, it just gets back to the fundamental question at play here, is the body that's regulating has not been trained in the area in which they're regulating. They're receiving recommendations from a committee, and if I'm not understanding that correctly, then I need to be explained how that's different.
My apologies, Senator Morse, I couldn't hear you.
I think you need to move the front.
Well, I think it gets at the kind of the basis of maybe the concerns here is that do we have a board that's regulating subject matter and competency in areas in which the board itself is not competent by virtue of its training and education, but relying on a committee that the board is the final sets the final rules and competency standards. And if I'm not understanding this correctly, then help me.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, and members of the committee, the Board of Psychologist Examiners is often in the position where they don't have all of the expertise right there within their committee, and so they are empowered to bring in subject matter experts, much like the Board Medical Examiners does. And in this instance, in setting up a formulary, as would be their current practice, they would bring in subject matter experts to advise them on how to do this. But it wouldn't be something that they would make in a vacuum. That's not been their past practice, and I don't believe that's the practice when the Board of Nursing was faced with this issue many years ago. Utilizing subject matter experts is often pretty commonplace for a board. And that's been my conversation with Deborah Orman, their executive director.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, if I may, it's my belief that this came up, which board should have the authority over these prescribing psychologists, and it was discussed about having them underneath the Oregon Medical Board. But there were several folks who had concerns that if you had a licensee licensed by two different professional boards, it was very unclear as to if there were problems, who would come in and have the disciplinary authority. We thought it would be very, very complicated to have these folks licensed by two different boards. That is why we came up with the idea. And this committee came out of the work group established last session for House Bill 2800, which Representative Kotek and Representative Linda Flores worked on. This committee came out of that work group. It was a committee meant to safeguard, to make sure that you did have that physician oversight, to make sure that you did have that input in this formulary, to make sure you had the input in the education and training. So no one's taking this committee lightly at all. It was put in as a safeguard, not only for that, but to leave behind some of the complication that we thought could come from having two separate licensing boards.
Just as a follow-up, if there is any kind of analogy to the Board of Engineering Examiners, that board is made up of engineers that have subject matter competency. And they set the rules and regulations. And in this case, the Board of Psychologist Examiners have not had that background and that training and education in psychopharmacology. And so that's the concern that I have.
Madam Chair, Senator Morrison, once again, that's why that committee is made up of our MDs and our pharmacists and two psychologists who have that master's degree in psychopharmacology. It's the intention, I think it's spelled out fairly clearly in the bill, that they have the ability to make all the recommendations about the rules to the board. But once again, the rulemaking authority for much of this stuff lies with the board, and having the committee go through the rulemaking process, we thought would be, I did discuss this with legislative council and thought that that would get very, very complicated.
Okay. So we've sort of covered the report at the bottom of page 5 in section 6. That they're going to report back to the legislature,
and in section 7, it talks more about the State Board of Psychologists examiners shall adopt rules requiring the prescribing psychologist to keep records of their prescriptions authorized and drugs distributed in the manner required for pharmacies. The requirement for the biennial report by October 1st of each year so that they can then report to the legislature on January 31st. The maintenance of the ongoing collaboration with the healthcare professional who oversees the patient's medical care. This is another one of the provisions that came out of the work group on House Bill 2800 with Representative Kotek and Representative Flores, where we have a documented collaboration with a primary care physician in advance of the prescription or change of any medication, and that must be documented in the patient's clinical record. So the Board of Psychologist Examiner will establish the rules for that documentation and then the necessary ongoing collaboration that must be documented in the patient's record as the care progresses. This also adopts in the other piece that was added in during the work group with Representative Kotek and Representative Flores, where we have a consultation with a child psychiatrist documented in the record prior to the prescription or change of medication of anyone under the age of 15. And that's a special safeguard added in for a special population that came out of that work group as well. The last portion of this just talks a little more about the documentation of these consultations and that the board will set up rules for review of those records.
So they actually
have to have ongoing collaboration with the healthcare professional who oversees the patient's medical care. Is that then reported somewhere too, or we're just saying that they need to do that?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that's just something they have to do, and they have to document it in their chart. And if for any reason their chart is reviewed, and during their first 2 years, when they're in their 1 to 2 years when they're in their supervision, their supervisor would be checking for this. And then my hunch would be in your written consultation agreement, those rules may include that the written consultation agreement has periodic checks of those rules. For instance, I have an outpatient mental health clinic, and we have a standardized quality process that we go through and we review our records and we look for things. This would be something that if I had a prescribing psychologist in my clinic, I would add to my quality reviews and I would pull for that on a periodic basis.
Then we get into the children.
Yes. And the children, you have to document a collaboration with a board-certified child psychiatrist prior to the administration or change in any medication for a child under the age of 15. And ongoing collaboration anytime that you may change that medication as well.
I know that there has been concern, especially with psychologists being in schools, they feel that Ritalin is going to be prescribed in a very frequent manner.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, for clarification, school psychologists do not necessarily have the credential to be eligible for a certificate of prescriptive authority because they are not necessarily licensed psychologists.
Absolutely.
Also, Madam Chair, if you wouldn't mind, I think when we had the gentleman, Mario
Mario Marquez.
Marquez come in and testify in front of you last week. He was telling his story that he goes and sees many children out in rural areas of New Mexico and is actually taking these children off of stimulants rather than putting them on. I think in many cases you'll see that prescribing psychologists prescribe less than psychiatrists. The Department of Defense study that was done by the GAO documented that was actually the fact. The first tool in their toolkit will always go and it will be therapy, and in many instances they'll be pulling folks off of pharmaceuticals rather than putting them on.
Another concern I have, of course, is with the geriatric population, and their behaviors do change and due to dementia or due to who knows what, where it would be not maybe appropriate to give a psychotic, which would actually exacerbate or make the symptoms or behavior worse.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I share your concern with the geriatric community. I work with several geriatric psychologists and have over the years. In my days when I was in Portland, I ran two geriatric psychiatric units, and we actually had a geriatric psychologist, neuropsychologist, who would come in and see many of our fragile elders before the prescription of any medication in order to look at ruling out some of those issues that might contraindicate whether or not you would use a medication. I am forever astounded, though, the number of folks who are referred in by their family physician for dementia or delirium who have a plain old UTI that my social workers catch in the emergency department every day.
Yes.
Can you go back to the question of children?
Yes, please.
On page 6, starting at 25, the way I read this, I think what you said was when they changed, I thought I heard you say when they changed the prescription, they have to check with a child psychiatrist. This says for the initial prescription, and then after that, it's to continue consultations during the treatment of the child to monitor changes in the child's condition. I didn't see here, by every time they change medications or change dosages, that they're going to consult with a child psychiatrist, so much when they should or shouldn't, but I thought your testimony just now indicated that they would be doing that. I don't think that's what this bill says right now, does it?
Senator Bates, I'm going back up to the ongoing collaboration with the healthcare provider and the changes in the medical condition back up there on line 12. So, yes, in essence, I'm kind of putting those two together with a little bit of assumption in there that they will follow that same practice in line 12 and 13, that they're consulting with the child's healthcare provider and this child psychiatrist, and the changes in condition. When you're changing medications, you're generally changing medications due to a change in condition, unless you're on a titration.
Yeah, I just don't see that actual language. It may not be necessary. I just wanted to point out that I didn't see the actual language here. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
This is just kind of a general statement. I think that from my familiarity with psychologists and speaking with various people, including the Mental Health Coalition of Lane County, there's an effort to get people off of prescription drugs, and psychologists tend to do more therapy rather than prescribe. And it seems to me if you are a trained psychiatrist and have all of the array of prescription drugs available, you would be more likely to rely on the drugs and the therapy. I mean, that's just, to me, a rule of thumb kind of situation. I think that they're trained to counsel, basically. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the Ritalin, I had a bill in 2003, I think, that said that school teachers will not prescribe. They will talk to parents about behavior problems and let the parents decide what to do. But I think if you rely on prescription drugs for most of your practice, that's where you seek solutions. So.
Yes, Senator Morris.
Thank you. I guess the question I would have is, what's the rationale behind the consultation requirement up to age 15, but when a child becomes 15, there's no consultation required?
Senator Morse, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that was the recommendation that came out of the work group with House Bill 2800, where we felt that 15 was that age physically with a child where their body chemistry becomes more along the lines, starts to transition into the adult body chemistry, and really the concern was about the young children and the impact on young children. So that was the recommendation reached by that work group. That work group had two psychiatrists, two psychologists, a primary care physician, a nurse practitioner, and Representative Flores and Representative Kotak.
Well, I thank you for your answer, but it doesn't help me understand that breaking point. I understand the body development, but if a person has the qualifications to prescribe at age 15 without direct consultation and requires the consultation at age 14, it seems to me that it begs the question as to whether or not we have appropriate training and education. And Dr. Bates, I would appreciate a comment with respect to that issue as well. So I just raise that issue as it's incongruent to the layman.
It is generally felt that the brain develops till in the early 20s now, maybe late teens the most. There's, I don't know about you, but in my practice, 15, there's a lot of hormones running wild out there yet. And it does seem rather strange. And I would have to say that it would be more appropriate that we'd probably take age 19 or 20 than 15. But all through this, and I appreciate the hard work that's got into this, don't get me wrong, that and other issues are just not quite there yet for me. It's just not tight enough. I had a couple more questions for them if we have time. In your work group, you had two psychiatrists. Did they agree with everything that was, this is not the bill they saw, but they saw a different bill, but it was and made the same commonality. Did they agree to the work group's work? Was it a consensus with the two psychiatrists there?
Senator Bates and members of the committee, there was consensus around the things that we were adding in, but at the end of the day, there was not consensus on whether or not a bill should even happen, and the statement was fairly clear that the bottom line was the bill should not happen at all under any circumstances.
So, Madam Chair, I'm going to make sure I heard this correctly just now. The work group did not reach a consensus.
Yes or no?
We did not reach a consensus. So this bill that we're dealing with and the changes in it is not a consensus bill built around that work group.
No.
Thank you.
Senator Bates, no, it is not, and that's unfortunate because I think Representative Kotek could probably explain it far better than I could, the level of frustration that there was no compromise we could make. There was nothing we could do. We couldn't come up with the right language. We spent that work group during House Bill 2702 for several meetings. We also initiated contact with the Psychiatric Association in July of last year and met with them seven times between July and January of this year. And in October, we gave them what was the original House Bill 2702 and said, here in October, you have our bill. Please tell us what we need to do to work together. Simultaneous to this, we're engaged in a process with the licensed professional counselors on their bill to say, what do we need to do to bring your bill together? They were two vastly different processes, because with the licensed professional counselors, we were able to engage in collaborative discussion about what would this take to make this a stronger, better bill, and they brought ideas to the table, and we brought ideas to the table, and we had a great bill. In this process, we kept bringing ideas to the table and bringing thoughts to the table and suggestions and weren't getting what will it take other than it just won't.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, we asked time after time, what more can we add to this bill? What do you need? What do you need for education? What do you need for training? At one point, they mentioned sending them down a PA track, but we never had a serious conversation about that. They never said, we want to make you BPAs. These folks have just reached out time after time after time to the Psychiatric Association and keep on coming back with concessions that these folks have made, but we're not getting any concession over here on the other side. And this has been happening for 5 years now. So we're just looking at our bill saying, we've tried, we've set up this committee that's made up of a majority of physicians. We've left wiggle room in there for rules for them to make this an even stronger bill. As I said, this bill is the floor. Mm-hmm. It represents what's happening with the Department of Defense right now. The education has been vetted. It's in six programs across the country. I just don't know what more this group could do coming together for a work session in the interim, because we really have built a very, very strong bill and have tried to address each one of their concerns.
With that, yeah, go ahead.
May I go off a couple of questions? We're trying to set something up here. And I didn't mean to generate a lot of conversation, and this was a yes or no answer, frankly, because I really didn't know, okay? And that's why I asked the question. In other states, who is the supervising board? Is it the medical board, or is it the psychologist board? Who supervises other states?
In the states of Louisiana and New Mexico, they are supervised by the Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Okay.
Senator Bates, Chair Monis Anderson, there's a little bit more detail on what happened in New Mexico. When they first passed the bill in New Mexico, they were actually under the medical board, and what happened was there were just roadblocks put up time after time after time, and they found 2 years later or 1 year later, they had to go back and change their legislation and put the authority under the Board of Psychological Examiners so the program could move forward and actually happen.
And Madam Chair, kind of a statement here. There is a problem with not having enough physicians or psychologists to prescribe. It is a problem, especially in rural parts of the country. It is seriously a problem, and that can't be ignored. Having said that, we're not looking for, at least I'm not looking for compromises. I'm looking for something that works, but also makes sure it's safe for the public. So this isn't a matter of each side moving together on something. We need something that's safe and works for the public in an ongoing way. And from my point of view, and just me, I'm now hearing things from the psychiatrists that are markedly different than the beginning of the session. I think they are ready to sit down at the table and have a frank and serious conversation. I would prefer, and I appreciate what you try to do, because I asked you to put these amendments together. I'm not running down a rabbit hole here. I think it's a step in the right direction, but if I stand back from it, I feel like we're trying to put a square peg into a round hole here, and we don't need to do that. We need some direct entry programs, either through a PA program or a nurse practitioner program, that somebody who has completed their psychopharmacology master's degree, which includes all the things we look for, you know, the ability to make a differential diagnosis. They've had some training in making a physical examinations. They should be able to go into a direct entry program, a nurse practitioner or a PA program, come out and be able to write these prescriptions, and then be under the appropriate boards automatically, one the medical board, the other the nursing board. That would make it clean and simple and straightforward. I can't even follow all the hoops these people have to jump through. They could be 5 or 6 years trying to get through something like this, the way I look at it, and that's not even fair to them or the public, and I don't think it serves the purpose we're looking for here, although I appreciate you guys put every bell and whistle on this you possibly could trying to satisfy people. I always like to see us take a step back and get a program going. There's a direct entry for these people into a nurse practitioner or PA program. They go right in, do their year, come out, and they're ready to go. I would like something simpler and clearer than what we've got before us. And you may not like what I just said, but I'm just laying it out there, okay?
With that, we need, in the interest of time, I feel we have a pretty good understanding of this. You know, you did yeoman's work on this. I would like to have the representatives of the psychiatrists come up with, I think, amendments, and I want them to discuss that with us so that we can. And I don't know.
Thanks, Senator.
Thank you very much.
And I would love to talk to Senator Bates a little more.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. Here. I'm going to need a psychologist and psychiatrist before we're through this thing.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCulley. I'm here representing the Oregon Psychiatric Association. I'm sorry I don't have an expert with me today, but I'll try to do the best I can. here to offer some of our issues. The chair had asked that we go line by line through the bill and address some of the concerns that we had. I suppose before I do that...
What I'd like, though, is for you... I think we know your concerns. What I want to know is what you are putting forward that could be adopted, since I think all of us want better access.
Okay. And I can do that if you want me to start there, Madam Chair, looking specifically at...
Right, because I think we heard pretty much your concerns at our last hearing. I'm more interested in what you have to propose here.
Okay, okay. The Dash 8A8 amendments are ones that we have developed, and I hope you have a copy of those with you or before you. I would like to start first just address this idea of the work group and the portrait that's been painted of how we have been involved with this process. It's important, I think, to understand that the work group that was talked about on House Bill 2800 occurred at the deadline for House bills to pass out of committee last session. There were two-hour meetings to try to hammer out an agreement over a very complex issue. And it is true, we could not reach agreement. We did not... like some of the ideas that were being proposed there, and I guess as it goes on in this building, when you agree to participate in a work group, sometimes you take credit for what comes out, even though you were not in agreement with that. So that was a kind of an interesting experience at the end of the session. We took a survey of our members at the end of 2007, talking about the bill, what was in the bill, and asked our members if we should support that type of a concept. We had 99%+ who said, no, don't go there. And so the leadership in our organization had their hands kind of tied as we started into 2008. It is true, we met several times. We did suggest the idea of a physician assistant program. The word was no, we aren't going to go there. We had expressed from the start that we were concerned about the initial training program, the way this 400-plus hour training program was done. So, unfortunately, we were not able to move forward with anything. But times change, and the Dash A8 amendments that you have before you, we think, help move us to the process of having something that can be enacted and put in place. One of the issues that we have felt is that the discussions have been primarily and sometimes almost exclusively between psychologists and psychiatrists. There have not often been opportunities for time for other groups who are interested in this to be participants. And those include primary care physicians, pediatricians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and members of the public, consumers. And that's why we are suggesting that at this point we kind of take a deep breath on this, form a group that would meet before the February session and come up with a plan and recommendation at the February session. So we've described a potential work group that could be formed, including physicians, including psychologists who now prescribe, and I think you are aware that there are psychologists who are prescribing in the state as nurse practitioners. We believe their perspective would be important to have on a work group. We're suggesting that
the work group be consisted of, so we get it on the record.
Sure. The work group that's described on the A8 amendments in section 1, starting on line 9, two psychiatrists, one of whom would be a member of the faculty at OHSU, a practicing physician assistant, a psychologist who also has prescription authority at this point, a psychologist who does not have that authority, a primary care physician, a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, a pharmacist, and a member of the public. So it'd be a 9-member committee. The group would develop recommendations for a training program, and we are looking at the hours involved in the original, well, the second iteration of the Department of Defense Psychopharmacology Demonstration Project. And according to the report that we have on that project, it involved 712 hours of academic training in the course of 1 year over a 12-month period, and it involved 1 year full-time clinical training following the academic work. We're suggesting that those be the parameters that we use. Realizing that the Department of Defense training program was restrictive to the types of patients who were seen, the supervision was incredibly intense during that time, but we believe that at the minimum, this would be the parameters of a program that could be effective. This program, we would determine what type of accreditation it might need. If the possibility exists, and I think, to be perfectly frank, our national organization is concerned about this, that establishment of a program like this could be the basis for other training programs across the United States. There are only 2 states, as you know, that have psychologists prescribing. If we as an organization, as a psychiatric association, promote this type of a training program, there is the possibility that other organizations like ours in other states may decide that this is an appropriate way to go. We think that there needs to be some look in this group of how to work with special populations. You know, we have criticized the other training programs for the lack of attention to prescribing to children, to prescribing to seniors, to prescribing to other special populations that may have chronic medical conditions, to prescribing to those who have chemical dependency issues. We believe this work group needs to explore how you develop a training program that can address the special needs of those populations. There may be statutes that psychologists are regulated by now that would need some changing. I don't know if that's the case or not, but we added in here that would be one of the things that the psychologists or that this work group would look at. The oversight issue. This work group would not necessarily default to the Board of Psychologist Examiners, nor would it say that the medical board is the one that provides oversight. I think that's an open question and one worthy of discussion. I can understand dual licensure and oversight by 2 separate boards. I think there's rationale to that. But at the same time, does it make sense to establish a 3rd board that oversees the practice of medicine, where you have the medical board, the nursing board, and now would be creating a 3rd board with the Board of Psychologist Examiners? So I think those questions are worthy of discussion. And of course, the group needs to look at cost of implementation. Then we describe in here how the work group would transact its business. The amendments state that the work group is completely volunteer. There is no expenses or reimbursement paid for participation in the work group. And finally, as I've stated previously, they would report back with their recommendations by January 31st in preparation for implementation of a program in February.
Who would staff this?
That, Madam Chair, is a question that I would, I don't have the answer for right now. I think that between, I mean, I think our organization would be interested in helping find somebody to staff it and pay for it. I'm not saying we could take on the full burden, but maybe there are organizations who could pull some money together and develop a staff person. Maybe it's the Portland State group that worked with us on the scope of practice work group. Maybe there is another way we can do that. But that is an open question I don't have a specific answer for.
That was my bill in Senate Bill 717. That was the last session. Okay. Are there questions regarding this? We now have information. We now have to weigh what we will do, not today, but on Thursday, and I'll be talking to each one of you. Yeah.
Just a quick statement here. If the committee decides to go for a work group or study group, I want to make it clear from my point of view, this is not a tactic just for pushing this off, pushing off, pushing off. We expect something. I expect something. I can't speak for the committee. I expect somebody to come back that is a pathway for allowing, under proper training and supervision, for psychologists to have an opportunity to prescribe. And we're doing this to help Oregonians, keep them safe, but help them. We have a shortage of people who can prescribe these drugs. I think many people who do prescribe them are not well-trained. Okay? And we need well-trained people out in the field doing this. So this is not just another what I would call another tactic to put this off. Now, this is the real thing now. If we decide to go in this direction, we expect something back here in February.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, and that's the commitment we're making, and that's why the date is in the bill as it is, that it is a date certain by which we must come up with a plan to implement a program.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, Senator Morstead.
I would be happy to vote for the bill as it is because I think it is a stall. I think it's a pure and simple turf battle, and I don't think you guys are ever going to approve anything meaningful. So I don't have much hope.
Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, Thursday is our last meeting date. So anything we do, we have to draft amendments in preparation for that.
No, we will either accept the A8s or the A9s.
Okay. Well, if I might offer, I was asking more negative questions than positive questions. Okay. But I want to make it very clear from my perspective, I believe the time has come for licensed psychologists with appropriate training and education to be granted pharmacy privileges for the prescriptive formulary. I think the will of the assembly, at least half of the assembly, when you have a 47-11-2 vote on the House, is saying the same thing. The question that before us today is to make sure that it's appropriate education and training. And that's my perspective. With respect to the Dash 8s, if we could somehow put a little more teeth into the issue that Senator Morissette addressed that says we will have a solution delivered to us that expresses the will of the Assembly, that in fact this work group is not to be stalling but to actually deliver a product. And right now, you know, it is a work group, and that's all it is. It doesn't have essentially kind of the whereases or the preface that sets the stage for where we want this to go.
Well, it does say on page 2 of the A3, A8s, that the work group shall submit a report to the Legislative Assembly or to an interim committee related to the practice of, and no later than January 1st, 2010. So there is a date certain as to when a plan would need to come before the legislature.
Madam Chair, the report or the plan
report.
Recommendation. It doesn't presume that it's actually an implementing report. It's just with respect to, as Senator Morissette calls it, a stonewall. So,
well, Madam Chair, if I might, I guess I was reading that it including recommendations for legislation was the operative language, that it's going to actually recommend legislation in this area.
Just submit a report, including recommendations for legislation.
Not just a report, it's actually going to recommend a bill.
Okay. I think we have enough information. There are two more witnesses that want to testify, and so I'd like to call up Brian Temple and Dr. Bill Dalton. I want to read in the record a letter from Robert Butler, PhD. I've been a from OHSU. I've been a clinical psychologist, neuropsychologist since 87, and am categorically and absolutely opposed to psychologists having psychotropic medication prescription rights. And I think you can read that, but I know we've gotten pros and cons.
Madam Chair, committee, thanks for having us. I just had a few points. We actually submitted our testimony last week prior to the change for the OPS and OMA, the Oregon Medical Association, Oregon Pediatric Society. So I'm here on behalf of the two groups to oppose House Bill 2702. And we do look forward to a work group to help implement some changes that I think are pretty necessary. And after hearing some of the revisions today, still think we're missing a lot, especially for those of kids. I'm a pediatrician in town, and I also do a lot of prescribing. I prefer not to. I don't throw Ritalin out there. In fact, it's pretty rigorous for kids to get the Ritalin, and they have to go through a thorough physical history and physical examination before we go that way. In addition to that, just some key points I wanted to make. I know most of this is in our testimony. And to answer your question, the PEP is the psychotherapy examination for psychologists, and it's run by the American College of Psychologists. My wife and two siblings are psychologists, so I'm not opposed to psychologists or what they do. I believe in therapy. I live with it every day. I'm forced to. And I understand it, and I have great respect for psychologists. Don't get me wrong. Some of the training or problems I have are the number of training and the type of training. As you mentioned, a psychiatrist does specifically 3 to 4 years of training in both adult and child psychology, in addition to internal medicine and diagnosis of common ailments, which could relate to a psychological illness or be similar in that regard. Additionally, after that, they do 2 more specific years of child psychology and psychiatry. Generally, they are not the best psychologists. They don't do the best therapy. They have a license to do therapy. They tend not to. They tend to prescribe more, as you mentioned. That is the tool in their box. And that's another reason I think we do need the psychologists, because they are the people we go to when we need a psychologist. Senator Bates, myself, physicians don't have the most training. We have hundreds of hours, probably 10,000 plus hours by the time we're out of medical school and training, and so we do have a lot of didactic and hands-on training with patients that do have mental illness. So the pure numbers is something I'm concerned with. Additionally, it was pretty vague to me just reading the bill, whether what the supervision was and how much of it was a direct supervision and how much of it would translate then into liability. They were saying they would review the charts, they would look on them, they'd sign off on them. Does that make that primary care physician or the psychiatrist who they interact with the liable party? I just don't understand who's taking charge of the patient then, because you are going to have problems, especially in kids 19, 20 or younger. They do have a different physiology, they do have a different hormonal base, and they do have different interactions, not only with liver, renal. It's completely different, and I see that every day. It's rare that I have a success on the first try with the medicine. It's not a science, really. It is an art, and you have to do it over and over before you can become comfortable with it. So having said that, labs, EKGs, x-rays, EEGs, hospital admissions. I just don't understand who will be ordering that if it comes to that. Most psychotropic drugs, you do require frequent follow-ups of the patient, sometimes weekly, depending on the medicine, and often monthly. I do that with all my kids with ADHD medicines. You have to do height, weight, blood pressure, and talk to them about signs and symptoms of problems with the medicine. And I just feel the training that I've seen and that I've heard about with these psychopharmacologists, the training for psychologists is just inadequate in order to provide the essential history and physical basis for diagnosis and treating not only mental illnesses, but illnesses in general. And I just again go back to the liability issue of who is going to be in charge if the patient does have to be hospitalized secondary to a medical error or just intolerance on the patient's part, and who's going to order the labs. I think it's a great idea to have oversight by physicians, but I can't see, they said it would be doable, but I have a hard time seeing who would view the charts and take the liability for them, considering there is a high liability, especially for children. And the majority of this also talks a great deal about child psychiatry and getting them involved for the child psychiatrist. I think this plan is great. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great for the adults, maybe, if it works out and they get appropriate training, but I can't see how it's going to work for children at all. First of all, no one, they mentioned one pediatrician the entire time, and I think that they need to have more say in this, because these are going to be the family practice pediatricians. The primary care doctors are going to be the one who have the burden of the medication and have to deal with the subsequent problems that may arise from it, and because that's their job and their training, and they're going to be asked to do things that, like, I didn't prescribe this medicine. What are you talking about? Or have no idea. It's not a perfect world in medicine, and we have a difficult time communicating with each other, especially psychology and psychiatrists. And that was another point, last point, and I'll make it quick, is when they were going to, they stated in there, and it was vague again, whether they would contact the psychiatrist, the child psychiatrist, with initiation of medicine and changes. Man, it's difficult to get a hold of a child psychiatrist in Oregon, let alone Salem or any of these smaller areas. So unless you have a set method of getting a hold or a psychiatrist on call who deals with all these patients, then it's almost impossible. We wait sometimes 24 to 48 hours to get a call back. We have really difficult patients that we're like, we need to hospitalize this 5-year-old who tried to strangle his 10-month-old child, like, and we still have to wait days. So, for initial consultation on medicine, I find it's going to be really difficult unless we have child psychiatry on board. And judging by the fact that the Oregon Pediatric Society, the OMA, the APA, the AMA, everyone is pretty against the psychologists prescribing. So it's going to be difficult to get the docs on board, the MDs. And one last issue, and I'll be quiet, is who has the ultimate power in disagreements? Like, I oftentimes have nurse practitioners who prescribe a medicine for a child and they're not having a good outcome with it. And, and I see the side effects. I take them off it. I don't have a problem with this. And I don't know where there's going to be a conflict of interest or if I'm seeing them for something else. So it's just one more step of bureaucracy of medical problems in communication, but it's something that's serious and we already have a problem with, so I think we're just adding to it here.
Okay, we really had wanted to just keep the testimony to, we've had a lot of public testimony. I just really wanted to focus on what was in the amendments and the bill. So if you could conclude.
I'm really concluded. Quick. I'm done. In both the original bill and the amendments, there were hardly any mention of pediatricians or family practice doctors or their role in this bill. There were some of psychiatrists and physicians in general, but that's the major amendment, and with the work group, I think, is strongly suggested, and I think that they do need to include primary care doctors and pediatricians. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Please
go
ahead.
Good afternoon. Is this on?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. My name is Dr. Bill Dalton. I am trained as a psychologist. I am not currently licensed in the state of Oregon. My training was as a school psychologist. I have served 30 years, most of it in Oregon, as an administrator of mental health and public health, a good portion of that in rural areas. and I have been the administrator of NAMI Oregon for 3 years, and an ongoing advocate with respect to mental health. So by all, for all intents and purposes, I should be here, you know, beating the drum, really, for this opportunity, which could well be seen as the opportunity to expand the number of mental health providers that we have in Oregon, particularly in rural areas. Interestingly, I have come in fairly naive to this. I just heard about the bill recently. I have just heard the amendments, as many of you have today. And I find myself having many major concerns about this bill. With respect to your comment, the comments and amendments that those comments have been directed to certainly address the concerns that I have had as I read the original piece of legislation as proposed. The training, the hours of supervision, the necessity of clarifying supervision, the importance of making the determination about who ultimately is going to be in charge of psychologists who have pharmacological prescriptive privileges, I think are essential issues which were not well addressed, were very poorly addressed in the original legislation. And I think many of the proposals that apparently you have heard and that I have seen in writing are, if possible, headed in the right direction if this is a salvageable piece of legislation. Maybe most importantly, I sit here with the background I shared with you, but also as a consumer of mental health services. I was diagnosed a number of years ago with several major problems I had just attributed to being overworked and underpaid, but it turned out that I have fairly significant medical problems. And I have been fortunate enough, after many years, to have been able to hook up with a very excellent psychiatrist. And I have been humbled over those years by the perspectives that my provider has been able to share with me. I really appreciated the comment made by the doctor in terms of that combination of art and science, because I think a truly well-prepared, well-trained professional, even one with the high level of preparation of a psychiatrist, will admit that there's a combination of art and science. I sort of liken myself to an astronaut sitting on top of a very powerful rocket, which in this case is my brain. And the question then becomes, who do I want to have directing the construction and the firing of that rocket? And the truth is, as a consumer, as a human being, I want to go with the gold standard. I want to have the experts, not just people who have taken some training in engineering or who happen to have an interest in calculus or physics, but I want to have my rocket under the consultation and, if possible, supervision, especially when I have problems, of those people who have put in not only hundreds but literally thousands of hours of both classroom training and supervision and practice, often in consultation with other practitioners. And so I really come to you today saying, please continue the kind of dialogue and process that you've had. I thought the questions from the committee today were just simply excellent. I've sat on a lot of committees on a lot of issues, and I really appreciated the questions and dialogue that you've had with the people at the witness stand today. Please continue that process. I do share the concern of stalling. As a psychologist, remember, I came up in a day and age when our favorite bumper sticker would be, we don't want we don't want the doctors determining what the therapists do. And I really appreciated that, the old medical model, if you will, and maybe Senator Bates can relate to that. But now my new bumper sticker would maybe be added to the old one. And that is, if I'm looking for somebody that's going to get into the intricacies of my brain and literally trillions of cells in my brain and the interaction with the rest of my body, I don't want a therapist. I want a physician, and preferably I want a psychiatrist. So if we move ahead in the direction of granting psychologists prescriptive privileges, and certainly an excellent case can be made for that, I certainly hope you will continue to exercise the kind of oversight that your questions and concerns have reflected today. And I do believe one potential way of cutting to the chase between Senator Morissette's concerns about just simply stalling an important piece of progress that could be considered and those who would like to move at this session is John McCulley's suggestion of having a work group with specific direction from the legislature that says you will come up with recommendations. A report, anybody can make a report. I can simply sit and tell you that we've sat for 43 hours and we haven't come to any conclusions. I think what we need to do, if you do choose the work group alternative, is to make sure that they come with a report that comes as close as possible to recommending consensus, and if not, has very clearly stated majority and minority opinions attached to that, so the legislature is in a position to make a good decision. Thanks so much for your time and energy on this, particularly since the House passed it. I was very concerned after reading the bill that the Senate would just fall into step behind that, and instead I've heard some very thoughtful discussion today, and I appreciate it.
Appreciate you coming and testifying. Colleagues, I would like to end this session. We'll be continuing this conversation on Thursday.
Madam Chair, yes. If I could, I'd be very quiet.
Yes, you have.
To say, when we expanded the scope for nurse practitioners and physician's assistants, there were lots of people opposed, and the world was going to come to an end. When we expanded the scope for dental hygienists, there were a lot of people opposed, and the world was going to come to an end. When we do any expansion, the world is going to end. We know that, and we know who the opposition is.
All right. I would like to close the public hearing on House Bill 2702, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.